All right, welcome back. It's another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobschall, coming to you from TCO Studios at Winter Park. Producer Nate Vaughn, as usual, is here, and we have a guest on today's show, and he's going to join us for the duration. Beginning right now, it's Vikings radio network analyst, friend of the program here at VEN, former Vikings linebacker, former Vikings assistant coach, Pete Bursich.
How you doing, Wobby?
We're doing great.
It's a different, a little different format.
Yeah,
a
different
setup. I'm kind of a little more used to this, I think.
Yeah, well, you do a lot of radio. You do our games on the radio. You fill in at KFAN. So this is a little bit in your wheelhouse.
It's comfortable.
Yeah.
Very intimate, less formal than, than the video, you would say.
Yeah, so, it is.
There's been so much going on here in the building. It's good to be back and it's different. Off season's always different. It's not as regimented. You don't. You know, you're not worried about going in, walking in through the facility or through the indoor practice facility and interrupting practice and things like that. I mean, guys are working out here and there, but that's changed quite a bit since my day and back when Denny didn't expect guys to stick around here all year round because they knew he knew that everyone lived elsewhere. You know, you had to get in shape kind of on your own and made sure you did your own thing, whereas nowadays I don't think there's a team in the league that doesn't keep their players in-house all season long. And a seasonal job has turned into a 10-month-a-year living in Minnesota job.
Yes. And there's so many different approaches one can have about the off-season. Like the more you practice, the fewer injuries you're going to have. But someone can come at you from the opposite and say, the more you practice, the more injuries you're going to have. And that age-old debate about, you know, how best to approach the offseason, and it gets collectively bargained and all that. But it is vastly different now than, you know, from when you were playing.
Yeah, it is. You have to look at it in – there's a risk to every reward. When you're dealing with non-contact type practices, non-contact situations in minicamp, you can really you can control kind of what situations are live, and I think that's the only real risk. I mean, guys could it can we saw it with Teddy, things can happen, and there's just nothing that you can do about it. You can't bring the whole entire screeching business to a halt just to say, well, we don't want to get anybody injured. Because you know what? They can get hurt walking up the stairs going into their house. I mean, a lot of things can happen. So those ifs never really go away. So you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. You got to make sure that a lot of work is getting done. But you want to be smart about it. I think we all know that the bigger injuries come when guys are fatigued. I mean, when I say bigger injuries, you're looking at injuries to joints and things like that. When the muscles get tired, they can no longer absorb what you're putting on them, so that energy gets transferred to ligaments and those kinds of things. So I don't think anyone's getting pushed that far this time of year. But things can happen, and those are usually going to be in live situations. So if you can control those a little bit. But then again, live is the only way that you're going to know how a guy responds, how a guy really looks. But these guys are unbelievable athletes, and they should be able to practice and operate at a very, very high speed and still be able to avoid contact at the ultimate time.
Well, you're listening to Pete Bursich. He's joining us here on today's Wobcast. One of the reasons Pete is here is to break down some film of our draft picks, Dalvin Cook, Pat Elflein, and tight end Bucky Hodges specifically. So Pete and I are going to do that after we record the Wobcast, so you can check that out on Vikings.com this week and next week leading into OTAs. For now, though, we're gonna have Pete join us for the duration of the Wobcast. Producer Nate Vaughn is here. Nate, what do we have coming up here in the show? We know it's a busy time, even though it's the off season. It's a busy time, especially for us here in VEN, with OTA starting next week and with VEN production days also being next week. But right in front of us right now is this edition of the Wobcast. So what do we got coming up?
Well, like you said, we're going to talk with Pete Bursich a little bit about what it's like, you know, doing play-by-play for the Vikings, what Paul Allen's really like, maybe. We can get a little inside information.
Spill some secrets.
And also, a few transactions still going on. We just had the draft a couple weeks ago now. obviously transactions in the NFL are slowing down a little bit, but the Vikings just picked up another few players this past week.
Yeah, they did, and let's talk about that right now, Pete. You will remember the name Will Sutton, if not from when he came out of Arizona State in 2014 as a member of the Chicago Bears. The Bears are the ones who drafted him. And, you know, when John Fox came to Chicago, he brought with him Vic Fangio is his defensive coordinator, who runs an odd man front. And so here you have a guy, Will Sutton, who leaves the Bears, or the Bears actually released him. And it makes you wonder if they thought maybe he wasn't a scheme fit. But the Vikings do think he's a scheme fit, but no matter where he's, you know, how you shake it, the Vikings add another defensive tackle to this roster. So your thoughts on adding a defensive tackle?
You're adding a guy for depth right now. I don't necessarily think you're going to find a free agent starter or a guy who's going to be, you know, you never know, he could be, but you're not going to look at him, I think, at this time as that kind of a guy. I think some things can be looked into and saying, did they see something in Jaleel that they didn't like in the mini camps? You know, I don't think you can just make a decision that quickly on somebody when you only seen him for a couple days in a rookie camp. We saw this, I think, all through last year when you had teams with a solid eight-man front, eight defensive linemen that would get rotated in. The Vikings were playing with six at times, seven. So there's some depth needed. And with what they require and what they ask of these defensive linemen to do when they're playing, they're either two-gapping or playing a gap and a half, you got to have some fresh legs out there if you expect them to run on the football. And I think this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. Something to the Vikings offseason on defense here, because they signed Dayton Jones, who was perhaps a misfit in a 3-4 defense in Chicago.
Yeah, how about that? How about it's funny how the 3-4 front used to be the odd front, where it was only run here or there.
Yeah.
And nowadays it seems as if the 4-3 front is the
right
oddball.
Right.
Getting guys that you don't want them, we'll take them. We'll put them in a 4-3 and let them go.
So you get Dayton Jones out of a 3-4 defense out of Green Bay. You get Will Sutton out of a 3-4 defense out of Chicago. You bring him in here, and by definition, they cannot play the position they played with their former team, because that position does not exist here. And so they're going to have to play a different position. The Vikings obviously have something very specific in mind. So.
Yeah, in even in a 3-4 type front, you can still at times shift the guys over on an edge, and you kind of get the same front. So you can still have bodies in the same positions. It's more the technique and what is asked of the defensive lineman. I think that's where it really, really varies. I mean, in a 3-4 front, a true 3-4 front, your nose tackle and your two defensive ends have to be very big. I mean, they're space eaters. They take up at least one blocker, sometimes one and a half or two. Where in this situation, it's more about gap control. It's more about quickness, about those things. So a defensive lineman who is undersized or didn't experience a lot of success in manhandling other offensive linemen could come here and thrive and do well. But if you see these guys from other teams come here, I don't think you can underestimate the effect of being in a room with guys like Everson Griffin is going to have, guys like Brian Robinson. You know, the amount, the way that those guys set the tempo, the way that those guys say, this is how we practice. You know, Brian Robinson, we were in Cincinnati, hottest day of 2 days. He's out there. Who's out there early? Who's the first defensive lineman out? Everson Griffin.
Yeah.
So no coincidence that he's probably one of your best players either. So those other veterans that come in, they realize that, hey, this is not a place where I can go and coast for a year or two and maybe get lucky and get a salary, another year on the pension, that kind of a deal. They're here to work. And Andre Patterson is freakish about technique. He has his technique and what he teaches matches the scheme. And So those guys will come in, and there'll be a lot of pressure on them. They'll be able to see firsthand the guys in front of them doing the job.
I'm glad you mentioned Andre Patterson, because this is his second stint with the Vikings. His first came in the late 90s.
Yeah, when I was here. He was a D-line coach when I was playing, yeah.
Okay, so you were a linebacker
during
his first stint as a D-line coach. So you know him.
Yeah, it was great to see a familiar face back in the building.
Yeah.
The remarkable thing is he was able to survive coaching in the NFL for that long. But he's also a testament to getting better. I mean, the players, they want to get better every single year that they can, but the coaches are the same way. And the game's changed quite a bit since our first time here together. But he's adapted, and what he teaches now is completely, again, in sync with the defensive philosophy and how much the game has changed. I mean, it was not necessarily a three wide receiver league, a nickel type situation 80% of the time back in the late 90s. I mean, you still had two back teams that liked to run the football, and you had a base defense. Nickel was reserved for third down. Now we're seeing that creep into first and second down more and more, and that affects the defensive lineman. Brings a linebacker off the field, adds another body to the defensive backfield, adds another twist to the defensive lineman in terms of substitution, because you can have a three-wide receiver group that they like to run out of, one that they like to pass out of, certain downs and distances. So you may have a big nickel, a small nickel, a third down and long nickel, all those things. It's a situational game, and matchups are always important. I think now teams are matching up personnel more than ever, And Andre has definitely adapted to that and thrived. So congrats to him.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he gets a player in Will Sutton. Again, last thing on Will Sutton here, I remember him coming out. He was a two-time All-American, two-time All-Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
45 tackles for losses.
And with all these guys, a lot of these guys we've brought in, they have the requisite height, weight, and speed to be effective defensive linemen. So what's missing? Well, or what don't they have? Well, is it they can't stay healthy? Is it between the ears? It has to be one of those.
A fit.
Because they're big enough, fast enough, strong enough. Right. Is it the scheme?
Right.
So there are a lot of variables out there that do and can affect. And we just hope with a guy like Sutton that, the 3-4 defense was not really his fit, so to speak. And maybe he can find a home here and be a productive alignment. But when you see guys like Tom Johnson and some of the other guys we've had up front kind of come out of Shamar, Stefan. I mean, these guys come out of obscurity and start and play.
And if
he's able to do that, then when you have experienced NFL talent come in, you would expect them, as long as they are willing to accept the coaching and tempo and the work, that they'll be productive as well.
Mm-hmm. I want to hit a couple of topics quickly here with you before we get into the rest of the show, which is going to include some fan mail that we're going to get to.
No Trump questions?
Well, we could talk about that.
That's okay.
Okay. Too divisive.
Well, no.
There's enough to talk about,
though. It's not politics. It's sports.
Right. There's definitely enough to talk about with that. That's for sure. Okay. We have you in here to break down some film, which we're going to do later, not on the Wobcast, but later in the studio for the website. The Art of Breaking Down Film. As a coach and an analyst, I want to get your, you know, quickly your perspective on that, because you did it literally for a living as a coach and even as a player. You see so many analysts doing it on TV, and now the All 22 for NFL film is available to fans to watch.
Fans can watch it,
And so a lot of people do it and think they know what they're looking at, and there are a lot of smart people out there who can watch and come up with observations, and that's great, but not like you can do it because you did it for a living. So I just want the art of breaking down film, how you go about it.
I think you learn it at different levels. Antoine Winfield was a guy that was here who spent a lot of time with younger players. And I think if you talk to any of the rookies, the guys like Brian Robinson or Harrison Smith, the guys that have been here for a long time, that's one of the first things I think that they'll still say that they learned is you learn how to watch film. You learn how to watch cut-ups by down and distance, by personnel groups, by all those things. And then as a position player, defensive linemen are going to watch different things. They're going to watch very, very this just the minutiae of the position. The hand of the guy, of the offensive lineman in the dirt, is he heavy on his hand? Is he light on his hand? Are his heels flat? Are they up? You know, are there? Does the quarterback look left and right and then straight before he snaps the ball? You know, they'll record the cadence and listen to that over and over again to see if they can pick up on something. Those are that kind of minutia a player has to love. He has to want to come in here every day. Because he's not responsible for scheme. He doesn't determine scheme. He doesn't get to determine what coverages are run, what blitzes are run, any of that. What he gets, though, to determine and come in is, where can I gain an advantage over somebody else? And when you meet with older guys, you just ask that question. What are you looking at? What are you seeing? You know, what is it that you notice that lets you know this is going to be a pass, even though it's a first and 10 after a first down, right? Those are the little things that a player needs to do. I mean, like, you look at Terrence Newman. There's no way he's bigger, stronger, or faster than what he was when he came out. Right. But he's still as good of a player, if not better, than he ever was. Why is that? Because he knows when there's two receivers to his side and the slot receiver's on the line of scrimmage and the Z receiver's off and their spacing is close, or such, you know, if they're close, then he knows they're trying to stretch the field horizontally. If it's a balanced four-wide type look, then that's when you get stretched vertically. I mean, those are the things that he'll know. And by doing that, you cut the route tree and what you expect to see, and then you can go jump. And when you do, when it does develop in front of you, you know it's coming, boom, you can go after it and get it. And that makes up for so much. Instead of reacting, you're being proactive.
Yeah.
Coaching is completely different in you watch film of the opponent to see what they do best. What is it that they do best? How do they like to go? How do they go about doing it? And then you have to sit down and figure out schematically how we're going to take it away. And you do that a lot. And, and you watch hours and hours and hours of film. And just by default, you learn the defensive coordinators, the other coaches in the room. They always find things, and you just take it and you put it in the back of your head and you just remember it and remember it. And, you know, I've been around now 22 years or so in this building, and seen hundreds and hundreds of football games and so much film that you eventually just, you can see things very quickly, you know, and that's the benefit of all those hours. And the other part of it is just knowing what matters and what doesn't matter. What's the difference between a good run and a bad tackle? You know what I'm saying? Things like that. Whose responsibility is what? And if you have a little insight, then you know that, a corner might be getting beat one-on-one, but he should be getting help by, if his alignment is such and such, he should be getting help by default inside because he's lined up outside. Or is that an alignment error? Is it somebody? You know, you kind of know what's wrong. Or it could be just unsound, because sometimes that does happen.
Yeah.
But rarely at this level.
Yeah. Initial thoughts on the Vikings draft class?
Initial thoughts, Cook's going to be he'll be the draft class. I mean, if he can come in and cure up a running game that really, I mean, let's be honest, can only go in one direction. It was glaringly inadequate last year, and that's I guess being nice, but you look at teams that go far in the playoffs, there's a balance. They're usually a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense, somewhere near there. That way, if the offense has a bad day, it's just like 98. The offense has a bad day, the defense has to be good enough to at least slow a team down to win. When you are that deficient in a certain area, it allows defenses to kind of dictate terms. And you remember Bradford early on in the season, about four or five games into the season, saying, I'm seeing coverages I've never seen before, because defenses are going to say, you know what, go ahead and try to run the ball. You know, we draw up a defensive scheme and we say, we're going to blitz, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. What's the weakness of all this? Well, what if they run the ball? And then they all kind of go, if they want to run the ball, let them run it. Whereas if a team has balance, you'd say, we're stopping Ezekiel Elliott here, but we're opening the door to Dak Prescott killing us. So when you have a balance, it becomes a lot harder to defend. He has to restore that balance. So in that respect, he's just a little bit like, you know, Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
You got to kind of restore balance in the system, in the force. awesome. And bring balance back to this offense in the NFL.
What a great analogy. We lose Chad Greenway to retirement. 20 to 25 snaps a game on defense, probably.
Yeah. Don't overlook when his fill-in, because we have had Byron Kendricks miss games every single year.
Yeah.
So that's a trend that's happened. You expect it to continue. You can't go into the season and just assume or really plan on those two guys being healthy all year round. Would you like to see it happen? Absolutely. But Greenway, when he stepped in and played, did a wonderful job. Downhill, attacking downhill. Yeah. So he filled the exact as an older guy, as a veteran, he did exactly what you want him to do. Because when Barr or Kendricks was out and then Greenway's in the huddle, hey, you don't miss a beat. Yeah. Everybody knows him. You're familiar with him. Same voice, same type of communication. And it was seamless, and that's what we saw. So even though Greenway maybe didn't get the snaps that he had when he was a younger player, he provided such a value. And I think that's something that this year is a big question to, you know, above and beyond who's the number three quarterback and who's going to be the backup inside deep. Who's going to be that number three linebacker? That's a big question, because that player is going to need to be can he be the backup at Mike and Will, or at Mike and Sam, and then play third down defense?
That's where I was going to go with this is Barr and Kendricks are your best two linebackers right now. I think that, you know, the way you would, based on how the Vikings have played Kendricks the first 2 years of his career, he's been the Mike linebacker. So, but what if you determine that your third best linebacker on your roster is a Mike linebacker? What would you do?
Well, if that's the case, especially if it's a young guy, I know kind of where you're going with this, with the kid we got from Michigan.
Yeah, Ben Gedeon.
With Gedeon.
Also Kentrell Brothers from Missouri, though.
Right. You're saying Gedeon, okay, you can be, if he can be the Mike linebacker in base situations, then you say that's what you worry about. You just worry about the third down, and don't even worry about the third down stuff, the nickel stuff. You're going to be a backup. Don't worry about that. Get the base stuff down. Mm-hmm. But that would require one of the other two linebackers to have to move and learn a new spot. Probably it'd be Kendricks in this case. Maybe out more in space, maybe not. But then again, if he's only 20% of the time,
not a real big deal.
Okay. Then he can go back to nickel on third down, which he's played all throughout his career thus far. So it wouldn't. You hate to add a guy and then have another guy get moved, where he has to learn a new spot, because now you have two kind of unsure positions. You just love to be able to plug a guy in.
Yeah.
So it's always, you want to get your three best guys on the field, and if someone has to play out of position for a while, you'd like it to be the younger guy. But in this case, I think Barr has been around, and Kendricks, you know, they've been around long enough where they can handle a move on base and then go back to their normal spots in nickel.
Yeah. Kendricks can handle that. I think he's been sensational his first two seasons, Errol pointing up.
He has. And one of the things with him is just the effort level.
Yeah.
I mean, his effort level has been elite. Hustles more, I think, than anyone else on the defense.
Yeah.
I really do. You see these guys breaking big runs against us, and who's the one guy in pursuit, right?
Yep.
Kendricks. And just that last year, that Tennessee game, it was first game. He looked a little hesitant. And then somewhere in that second quarter, the light just turned on. Mm-hmm. And he started getting downhill and making plays. Then he makes the interception. And it was a neat thing to see. Yeah. So if he continues with that effort, he's going to continue to get better too.
Yeah, a neat thing for me to see is on game days when I sit between PA and Pete, and after a play is over, there's a TV monitor in front of us, and you know, Pete will sometimes point to the monitor to something that has happened or to someone who's done something and thumbs up or thumbs down. And so often it's pointing at 54, thumbs up.
Right.
Like that guy.
Yeah, and you're right. And so for us in the booth, whenever you get a satellite feed, as long as it's not the stadium feed, but a satellite feed, there's a delay.
Yeah.
And the hard part, you look at the offensive coaches. As an offensive coach, you know the play before the ball snaps. So you have a guy watching the front side, a guy watching the back side, a guy watching it. Yeah. Defensively, you got to do the same thing where someone watches the D-line, someone watches the back. You can't see all of it in detail at once. But if you the play happens in front of us mm-hmm. and PA's calling the play-by-play and you get that little delay, then I can look immediately to where that ball, you know, where kind of where it's going. So you, it's a you get to cheat a little bit so you can see right where it happened and right exactly what happened. So we always appreciate nationally televised games because there's a delay on the monitor.
Yeah, it gives you an opportunity to – and sometimes, you know, you've had a great take on the initial play and then you get a second take from watching the replay.
Right.
So, you know, it's a great tool.
Right, and then, yeah, so, I mean, because on passing downs, you can only watch the back end or watch the DBs and the receivers. You can't see – and if the quarterback drops back and then gets sacked, you can't see – exactly what happens. So you have to kind of either Abbott, who watches the front a lot, will pop in and say who got beat and or who won. And if you can get that replay in before, you can see exactly how he went about doing it. So
it's a pretty fun experience. All right, let's get into some fan mail. Love taking questions from fans, whether it's on the Monday Morning Mailbag or here on the Wobcast, because then I know we're talking about something the fans want to talk about, and that's what we're here to do. So Nate has three questions. We're going to...
Three?
Three questions.
Oh.
Okay, time for three more. We're going to go take these fan questions, and let's see what they got.
Well, you guys were talking about the third linebacker spot for a while a little bit earlier. Matt is asking about the third wide receiver spot, Matt says. Well, he says, who do you believe will take the wide receiver three spot?
Yeah, so you have Diggs and Thielen as your first two. And, you know, you hope it's Treadwell, I think. But who's it going to be? We don't
know. Yeah, you don't. And traditionally, the old school way, I guess, of thinking about it is the what's the slot receiver? Well, he's normally the not necessarily the guy with vertical speed, but the underneath type quickness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the Chris Carter of the world. You know, Chris Carter was really that kind of guy. So who fits that mold?
Mm-hmm.
Does Laquon Treadwell fit that mold? No, not really. So in that case, would you have to move one of the receivers either? Diggs has that vertical stretch the field ability. So I would see him being... You don't want to reduce the formation with him too much. You want to keep him out in space.
Okay.
Thielen would be that guy, the underneath guy.
Yep.
Would be absolutely able to fill that spot. Laquon Treadwell, we know he's tall enough, big enough, fast enough, strong enough. It's just a matter for him to figure everything out and get himself going.
I've heard a few good things about him so far in the offseason program, but we can't get too excited about that because they're running around in shorts. But, you know, we'll see if he can step up.
Yeah. All
right. Question number two.
Question number two is another receiver question. With the recent signing of Michael Floyd, do you see this offense becoming more of a four wide receiver set with a single running back?
I don't know. I don't think so because that means your fourth receiver is going to have to be better than Rudolph. Because Rudolph is technically the threat, and Rudolph gives more of a run possibility than, you know. So, yeah, you want to get your best four receivers on the field. And I think the tight end position lends itself, even if your tight end is not technically your best receiver, it gives you some flexibility because you can keep a tight end in to block and free release the running back, and now you're still getting your four receivers out and five-man protection. Whereas if you have another receiver in there, you can't possibly do that.
Right.
So the tight end position by default, I think, gives you a lot more versatility when your fourth best receiver, in our case, probably a third best receiver, or maybe even higher, somewhere in there, is a tight end. So I don't see the Vikings wanting to abandon the four-wide set. You know, with the tight end in there, you make the edges a little wider. I mean, when you're just five linemen wide and one back in the backfield, it makes the job of the defense a lot easier in blitzing, a lot easier in a number of different ways in learning and understanding the protections. Because if you get a formation and you know out of this formation I only get this protection, you're done. I mean, the defense will find a way to get to the quarterback. So the tight end versatility. You can put the tight end and the running back in the backfield. You can put the tight end on one side. You can shift him over to the other side. You can free release him, block the running back. You can keep him in and block and free, you know, and do. You can change up enough where I see that tight end position with Rudolph not coming off the field.
Me too. I mean, I see us being 22 personnel before I see us being 10. So, and you know, we signed Latavius Murray. We drafted.
Who's going to play fullback in 22?
Well, that I don't know. We're going to find out.
Who's going to play the other tight end?
Well, we moved CJ Ham. CJ Ham to fullback. Maybe he can do it. You know, we signed Murray, draft Cook, signed two starting tackles, draft Elfline. I just don't – that to me means like we're really going to try and run the football better. I don't see it being a four wide receiver set very often. Question number three.
Question number three from Toby in Alaska. He says, who is your guy to watch this year? Toby's guy is Moritz Boehringer.
Okay.
Also Bucky Hodges.
Okay.
So he's got two guys. What's your one guy?
I'll go first on this one. It's none of those, although I wish them both well, and I am excited to watch Bucky Hodges. But to me, it's Mac Alexander, because you lose Captain Munnerlyn, and I think that opens up an opportunity for Mac Alexander in his second year to come in and earn playing time. And I think the Vikings took Waynes in the first round 2 years ago and Mac Alexander in the second round last year, knowing that soon they would be without Terrence Newman and Captain Munnerlyn.
Right.
They are without Munnerlyn. Newman is back for one more year, but this is Mackenzie Alexander's time. So to me, I'll be watching him.
Yeah, I think that he's a key. I think the other guy that I want to keep a good eye on, not necessarily he's coming under anybody's radar, but is Danielle Hunter.
Yeah,
Had the opportunity to bump into him over the weekend at Brian Robinson's fishing tournament down in Wabasha, and he's becoming a man in front of our eyes. I mean, that was, I remember him coming out of college, that was one of the things. He's just not very big. He's a lanky, long type pass rusher. Well, folks, he's filling in.
Yeah.
And he's not getting any smaller. He's
yes.
just getting bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
And with guys like Everson Griffin and Brian Robinson in the room showing him the way, man, is that kid, he might be the guy to dethrone at defensive end. And I mean, will he be able to fill Brian Robinson's spot? I don't know. You got to be a little, when you're playing that base end and you have the tight end to your side most of the time, you got to be a little bit better in the running game, which I don't think is necessarily Daniil's forte.
Mm-hmm.
But oh my heavens, when you get to third down, I mean,
yep.
You have Brian inside, him on the outside, Rob, you know,
set him loose.
Yeah, just turn him loose.
Yeah,
turn him loose.
All right, that's it for fan mail. That's it for the show. A few housekeeping items here before we go. One, coordinator interviews. We've interviewed Pat Shermer, George Edwards, and Mike Prefer. The Pat Shermer interview is up right now. The other two are coming up shortly. So go to the website to check out those three interviews for the first time we hear from our coordinators here in the offseason. Stephon Diggs toured the new practice facility in Eagan. And so we have articles, videos, and photos from that. The website has more coverage of that.
Were they looking for thoughts and ideas, or what, you know, or is he just kind of checking it out?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he's got you know, post career aspirations.
Well,
he wants to be a construction foreman. Can't
or
see him do that?
I'd see him more in architecture.
Okay,
than
yeah,
construction
so,
foreman. You know what I mean?
So that's why they brought him along. Yeah, so go to the website, check that
out. I just
out.
Hope they have a lot of windows, because that's one thing this place is lacking.
Yeah, I think there will be.
I mean, Lord, we bricked them all up. And I mean,
transparency.
Bud Grant bricked every single window up
right.
in the coach's offices, because back then film was film and you had to watch
right.
it in the dark.
Right.
So you don't see, and most of the players stay in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see, you don't see sunlight. When it's late in the winter, I remember as a player, you get here at 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock. The sun's not even up yet.
Yeah.
You're in the building all day. You don't see the sun. You're outside in the practice facility, no windows. And you go home at 5, you don't see the sunlight all day.
Yeah.
And that, hey, and Fred Zambrilletti would say, you know, that that takes a toll on a guy.
Yep.
So I'm just saying, well, make sure there's a lot of windows.
There's going to be a lot of windows.
Good, Stefan. Good.
The new thing in like office buildings and stuff is to have like clear windows, like even inside, like you can see into people's offices and all that stuff. That's what's going to be going on. It's going to be very transparent. Mm. That's the buzzword.
Sounds good.
Anyway, I was also out there, and it's coming along. It looks really good.
Good.
All joking aside.
I drive by it every day. It's amazing how quickly that thing's going up.
Yep. They're working hard over there. Lastly, you've been listening to Pete Bursich for the last 20 or so minutes. If you want to get more from Pete, go to Twitter. If you like high school football, because Pete is the head coach at Hill Murray High School, if you like music, if you like space, and if you like football, you'll enjoy following Pete Bursich on Twitter, @PeteBursich.
Kind of random, but It is what it
is. That's basically what you're about, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So go to Twitter and follow Pete, at Pete Bursich on Twitter. That's going to do it for this edition of the Wobcast. We're going to be back next week with another edition, so please stay tuned for that. Continue to send in your questions to us via email, because we always enjoy hearing from you. So on behalf of our guest today and our friend Pete Bursich, and on behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host Mike Wobshaw, signing off for now.